Edge for obvious reasons. The main reason being is that we have a band that you all know called Yes, who are good headlining the event. So without further ado, I would like you to give a very warm welcome to Yes! To introduce these guys, I seriously nervous. Gentlemen, first of all, thank you for allowing yourselves to be interrogated. Maybe that's a good word, it won't be an interrogation, I promise you. We'll be some amongst friends asking some pertinent questions. I will start with Chris, because I remember this off the top of my head. Somebody collared me, and they'd asked you a question, they said you couldn't remember. If you don't remember now, that's fine. When you played Japan, did you actually play Don't Kill the Whale? Which I know is said. Well, that's a pertinent question. But you said you couldn't remember whether you had.
No, I couldn't remember.
And can you still not remember?
No.
Well, there you go. There's the diplomatic answer. So we can go play Japan again now.
But the thing was, we did.
Oh, there you go. Alan remembers that you did. So whoever asked that question is out there somewhere. I know this doesn't vary.
Well, it must have been a long time after we wrote it, because we went in 73 and we didn't go back for years. So
yeah.
In between, we wrote
that. That's good. A couple of questions I'd like to move through the band individually and ask you these questions. Cruise to the Edge, a very obvious concept. Chris, is this the strangest gig you've ever played?
It's a new parameter, actually being on a moving object. definitely very weird for all of us, and Steve's steel was sliding backwards and forwards. In a way, maybe was it made it easier? I don't know. Much
harder. Jeff, how about you? You've played in some exotic places in your time, I know. The Caribbean's not a bad place to do a concert, is it?
No, it was a bit of a bumpy ride, particularly the first night. It's all right, you know, it's a good crowd and appreciating it, I think. You know, I think everyone just sort of pitched in and went with the flow, as it were. You get my joke.
Well, yeah.
He's been working on that one since Monday.
Yeah, I understand.
Alan, how about you? Were you strapped in?
I wasn't strapped in, but people think because I was sitting down it didn't affect me as much. But quite frankly, that seat was, I was doing the next one, so, and actually Steve wrote a song called Bumpy Ride. So. Yeah, but I was kind of aiming at drums and cymbals and hoping I'd hit. That was about it.
John, you could move around the stage so no one would know whether it was affecting you.
You've never had such interesting stage moves.
Were you choreographed or did you do it yourself? This is the for you. How about this gig? This must be a weird gig for you. It's not weird in a great way.
Yeah.
But
Well, it's been really fun connecting with the fans and just having a more intimate setting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know all about your fans. Chris told me it was difficult playing, you know, hitting the pedals, and obviously you've got a few problems like that as well. Was it? Saw the steel moving, and you discreetly pushing your back.
That's right. At least I'm used to moving around a little bit with my right foot. But it was definitely. I mean, I did one in 2000 that was similar to this, not as big and not so much to do, but just a solo one. But when you asked the question earlier, I thought maybe the stranger gig that I did than this was actually in a cave.
Cave.
Yeah, in Cornwall. Yeah. And what was particularly strange about it was dripping. So while you were playing, you had to kind of go, oh no. And it was like water.
That's actually where it is.
excellent. But I said that, even in a cave, the ground wouldn't be moving.
It wasn't moving, no, but it was very wet and cold.
I've got some questions here, gentlemen, if you would allow me to ask these on behalf of these wonderful people. This is a question by Don Rogers. Don, where are you?
You're there somewhere.
Yeah, this is Don. This is pretty pertinent to this. Again, I'll go through you guys. Have there been any other bands here that you've watched and enjoyed during the cruise?
I was watching UK last night. They were real good. And then this woman came and sat down next to me and said, "You look like Chris Squire. Are you Chris Squire?" And I went, "Well, I am. I'm watching UK." She said, "No, you just look like him, aren't you?"
That could be she had left you alone if you said that.
And eventually I got my ID out. And that's it.
That's got to be
you. You've got to borrow that from him, she said. You've got to borrow that. After a while, I didn't see much more of them, but they were real good.
How about you, Jim? I know you always see UK.
I always get. I really enjoyed UK last night. We always sort of get mixed up. People get mixed up with who you are. I always ask, "Are you Alan White?" "What's that?" "I don't think so." It wasn't yesterday.
I think you're
all there. Well, you're all morphing into the one. If you stay in yes long enough, you all morph to look the same. I mean, so has there been any bands here? Do you see, of course, any of the bands that have been like, apart from the UK?
I'm looking forward to seeing Steve Haggie, actually, later.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I've got Steve, the other Steve has.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to that.
How about you, Alan?
I've seen a few bands wandering around. Steve Hackett, I saw him the first night. Good to see some of that really old tennis system.
Yeah.
I don't know if Steve's here, but I saw him last night at the UK, but no, good. He's got a particular style of playing that's kind of a little bit different, so.
Yeah.
But, I saw a bit of Zebra, I saw Billy Carl, and all those kind of things.
Kind of dropping in and out of things. Well, the thing is, on a situation like this, it is all the way. It's like a festival, isn't it? You drop in and out and see various things. Yeah. Okay, John, how about you?
Well, I was hoping to catch some steel drums at one point, but it never happened.
You need to stop up in Jamaica.
I'm a huge Genesis fan, so I really love seeing that first day. I'll catch that again today. And seeing Glass Hammer as well yesterday.
I thought that might interest you somehow. Steve, how about you?
Well, I caught a bit of Ambrosia yesterday.
Yeah.
Nectar, who, funny enough, they were doing a sound check and before the show also, and I called out, "Cop on the way home!" And a couple of them realised what that meant, and that was the Ivan session for the band when they covered the Blind Faith album, so I had a little bit of laugh with them. But yeah, I watched UK last night and saw John singing with Tony Bozio. Wow!
This is a really, really cerebral question. I'll ask purely Chris and Steve because you guys have been to the band longer than anybody else. This is a bit wordy, but it's an interesting one. This is from Tim Babel, is that correct? He's from upstate New York. Okay, Tim, here's your question. And he says, "I think I speak for most of us here when I say that your music, as well as Roger Dean's art, transports us to a place that transcends our material reality." See where this is going, can't you? Can you attest to the realness of this other world in which your music speaks, or is it merely illusion and fantasy? Or...
is this a five-part question?
There's a 10-point bonus question at the end. Or would you answer to such questions that it's better left unspoken?
Roger Dean's artwork, of course, has been a great part of our history, and Roger is on the ship, and and of course he really is the originator of the Avatar movie, so so we owe him a lot, and he's a good bloke too. Over to you, Steve.
Can I just say the people that are running their cameras continuously with big red lights on the front of them, can they turn them off, please?
I think there's a mysterious thing about, you know, what things mean and how to interpret and understanding that. And I've heard a few good quotes, I'm not coming to mind right now, but the kind of thing those quotes are is like, well, you know, if I told you, you wouldn't believe me, or it's about three things, like one song can be about three things. Another thing is, yeah, I think music is about your personal imagination, and if you limit that by saying, oh, this is about brick walls or something, you know, then obviously you limit it to that, so the best answer must be, use your own imagination about what things mean.
Which I guess is, you know, speaks for itself, isn't it? Here's an interesting question. You bound to get questions about different eras. The current era is performing three albums. And when I first heard about the three album set, I think that's absolutely right. When I spoke to Alan last year, I said, how did you arrive at those albums? And he said, with a lot of discussion, which is English for, we argued a lot. So how did you arrive? I might as well start with you, Alan, because you told me. How did you arrive at those three albums?
I guess it was pretty simple. A lot of emails, kind of for about 2 days, and then it became obvious that these might be the best three albums to try this out with. And like in true Yes fashion, we don't do one like other bands, we do three of them, so. Most of the time we do that. Unfortunately, the bumpy rides stopped us on the road, but anyhow, we're enjoying it, and close to the edge, and going for the one, and the Yes album.
Is that all the
road? Don't stop. Maybe we'll do it for the next time.
Can I ask you personally, what did you consider drama? Because you have four fifths of the drama line up here.
I think by drama, I'd fight hard with the fight. When we were talking about the three album concept, I think one of the reasons we did Going for the World was we already worked quite a lot of that album already with Awaken and What the Store Is. So we sort of had that one, you know, with the addition of Turn of the Century, we sort of had that one under our belt in many ways. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Yes album. From my own standpoint, I played a lot of that as well. So it was fairly decisive that that's what we would do. Those three albums sort of surfaced, if you like.
Can I just say, personally, from a personal point of view, I'm sure a lot of people agree, Awaken was one of the most sublime experiences of this cruise. Yeah. And all of those, incredible. Seriously. John, how did you feel? You've been in the band a while now, you're getting your feet, although on the ship maybe not. How did you feel, like three albums in one? Yes, concerts are pretty long in the first place, but to do three albums, literally, some of you've been to three albums, how did it feel for you? Thinking, my goodness, I've got to learn a lot of lyrics here.
It's a wonderful experience, but I've been listening to the music for decades as a fan. Yeah. So it was already in my DNA.
When you first came to the band, was there a particular song that you thought, like, can we do this?
I love them all.
Okay.
You know, that's the truth.
All right, how did you guys feel with, can I just say as well, isn't this man doing an incredible job?
The way we also came to that conclusion about these three was there was a kind of mixture. There was a little bit of ease going in there that we could, you know, pull out some songs that we knew, and there was a challenge of songs that we hadn't been doing. So there was a balance of kind of, that will help, but that would be a challenge, you know. So there was a kind of coming together of, you know, we didn't want an easy ride, but then we didn't want to drive ourselves crazy either.
No, of course, and with the lineup that we have here, you have to play to the strengths of this lineup, because obviously the Yes West era, if you like, that's, you're not going to count that amongst the potentials, because it's a totally different thing, different lineup. So, but I like, one of my favourite albums by you guys is Going for the One. But I don't have a problem with Close to the Edge or the Yes album either, so, and I don't think any people hear you either. Here's a question for Chris. This is by John Robbins, who is Olympian. Is that Washington State? No. Oh, there's over here. Chris, you've spoken before about your years as a choir boy. What influence did those years have on you and your musical style and the larger-than-life music of Yes?
Well, quite a bit, really, because I learned an awful lot about arrangements as a boy, and I could read music then too, and could sing and read. And then, of course, in 1963, when I was 15, and the Beatles weren't reading music, and so I thought, so I won't be doing that anymore. And But it all came together, really, when we, especially, when Yes started and we started introducing the orchestral elements into the band, and of course in the early days of keyboards becoming synthesizers and being capable of having those orchestral textures, it all came together in those 5 years, 68 through 73. Everything was developing, and a lot of my past choir musical elements came in. In fact, that little vocal line at the end of Perpetual Change, the da 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 da, is actually from a choral piece I used to do. I don't remember what it was. I think it was a 16th century piece.
Nobody's got to claim the royalties, though. That's
I think it was William Byrd.
It's okay. A good year for.
Guys, this is a drama question. So this question includes everybody except John. Sorry, John. We don't need to exclude you. This is from Ed Conley, who's from Delaware. Hello to Delaware. It says question for Alan, but I'm going to ask this to you guys. How did you come up with the intro to Into the Lens from the drama album? It's specifically to Alan, but was it something that you came up with, or was it something that you and Chris worked on? But I know, Jeff, that started off as a bubble song, really, didn't it?
The core of the song was something that me and Trevor had as a bubble song, and I think that when we joined Yes at that time, we brought some ideas to the table, and it was really a very kind of natural fusion in many ways. Not maybe to the outside world, but internally, we all felt very comfortable with the way it was going. And I think that particular track, I think your idea was a rhythm intro, which was and so we just kind of extended it. And I think when you look at a track like Machine Messiah was put together, again, it was very kind of the way that Yes has always worked, I suppose, which is to take a basic idea and then just keep expanding it, and it becomes a huge piece.
Of course, Chris, Steve and Alan, you started work on the drama album as a three piece.
We did. Before the guys came in.
Yeah.
Back before the other guys left, really, because Alan, Chris and I were working in London, and we kept going, oh, where's Rick? Oh, we'll just do this and we started doing Tim's Fusion and things like that. So there was this kind of pre-time that we were, developing. And that was very good for us instrumentally, particularly, because we had a lot of stuff up our sleeve. Obviously there's a lot of stories we could tell that we can't, but there's a kind of like moment where the cliff changed, the edge came, and we kind of...
Interestingly enough, that beginning to Into the Lens then showed up a year later on the Death Leopard album.
I think so. I think I heard some of the demos as well that you guys started off doing. That certainly puts to bed the comments that are sometimes aimed at Yes, that Yes don't rock, yeah? Because when you listen to those tracks as a three-piece, you guys kick ass. Is that how you say it? We've got another question now. Two guys, Pablo Perino and Robert Aguare, is that correct? I think Robert is from San Diego, Pablo is from Argentina. Steve, it's well documented that your influences include country and jazz players such as Chet Atkins. When did you first hear this very American sound that's obviously not obviously pop or marketed for broad appeal?
Well, I was thinking just yesterday that you know, a lot of people see the like the British invasion, but before the British invasion of, you know, the way we play blues, the way we play progressive rock, actually, you know, Brits were taking a lot from America, and I certainly, you know, wanted to come here and see guitarists in the Raw. But guitarists like this guy Chet Atkins came along in my life just a couple of years after I had started playing, so about a year later, I think. And I think the album Teens Level that I'm often quoted and mentioned is called something else in America, and that's why I could never seem to track down any comment about it. But yeah, Chet's influence was enormous. And Britain looked to America to, you know, for all the soul music, and, you know, people like Ray Charles and Tony Bennett and all these guys, you know, you had a lot going on. And we decided to turn the tables on you and kind of, you know, come back to you with blues, you know, come back to you with new kinds of music. It was basically fundamentally earlier on influenced by, you know, some of the great American artists that we love very much. And I saw Wes Montgomery play the guitar when I was 16. So, you know, he was a knocking up, just fantastic knocking. There was a lot to be absorbed with and be influenced by.
And of course, you moulded all that into your own style now, which influences other people.
Well, yeah, I guess I'd hope to do that. I wasn't so aware, even when I joined Yes, that I was actually doing that. You know, it's only when you look back that, you know, I had to own up. Hey, I'm coming on with that idea. You know, still be relevant again today.
A question for you, Chris, and it's a technical question. This is from Greg Glenn, South Korea, but born and raised in Alabama. So hello to you, Greg. Chris, how have you managed to keep your Rickenbacker from being lost, stolen, or damaged for so many years? I think I know the answer to this possibly, because you have more than one, don't you?
Well, my guitar's entrusted to Richard Davis has been my tech since the late 70s, and still with me. And, you know, so he looks after my instruments and does a really good job.
Do you still have the original? Because you bought the original rig. It was in Charing Cross Road in London.
Yeah, the one I was playing yesterday, on day before. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the original bass. It's been refinished a few times.
Because, I mean, do you have one of these special rigs with the extra fret? Boots, I'm being technical, because there was about 20 made, and I'm thinking if anyone's got one, you probably do.
Yeah, no, I do have a one that has the diamond fretboard that goes up to E. Top of the G string.
Okay.
But generally, you know, my the one I use is an E flat. So.
Okay. Now this is a message. A question for the whole group. Luis Sanchez, who is in Metepec, Mexico. Where you are, Luis? It's good to have you here. What is the message that Yes intends to deliver with their music? I suppose that is different for every member of the band, so we'll start this way. Chris first.
Sorry, what was the question again?
What is the message that Yes intends to deliver with their music? And what are you trying to get across with your music?
We've always tried, you know, as in the name, we've tried to put across positive thoughts and positive ideas in our lyrics and messages of hope and love and all.
Leave us a few, Chris. What's that? Leave us a few to the other way. Say it. Yeah, say it all.
All right.
I was going to say he's answering
to Jeffrey.
I was going to say love. No, Chris has already said it.
You never have enough love, Steve.
I learned a theory which I've discussed with quite a few people and about Yes's music, and one of the, as Chris says, a positivity in the name, but if you actually analyse the music, one thing that struck me when I was doing my research, learning the songs in recent times, is the amount of major chords
that's
used in Yes's music. And if you look at a song like Awaken, you get every single major chord in a row in the chorus part, which is an incredible piece of composition.
Well, thank you, Jeff.
Yes. To be able to, and if you actually look at a lot of Yes's music, it's very, very uplifting. And that's the, you know, that's the secret of that, I suppose.
I'll just add to that. The band is all, I think, you know, not being there from the very beginning, but since 72, it's had a lot of its own identity, its own sound, and you kind of know when a Yes song comes on, and that's the kind of angle we always like to be something different, you know, and I think we achieved it over the years.
John, you come into the band, and so far you haven't sort of been part of the creative process, but as a singer who's fronting a band, you have to convey the group, if you like, identity, and get those songs across lyrically. So how do you sort of see it?
Well, what's so unique about Yes music is that it has this, what I call a transcendental quality to it. There's a spirituality that's embedded in the music that's unique to Yes music. That's something I've always related to. I meditate, my wife and I. So I just bring that to the stage. I bring what's inside outward through the music, and it's a perfect medium to do that.
You also look, I mean all the guys do, but you really look like you're having the time of your life on stage.
I confess it's true.
Steve, we'll take it as read. Love. Will we move on from love?
I think anti-violence, you know, I mean, I can't watch movies that have got, like, you know, people shooting and doing. Why does America and other countries make so many dumb movies where everybody gets shot at them? Personally, I think Yes music is about anti-violence. But as going back to the point Jeff made, you know, I don't think there's another song in the world, maybe, that has every major and minor chord combined in it, and that Awaken does have every major and minor chord that exists in one song. I think that's quite funny.
But also, if you look at a song like that, You and I, you know, that's a very, very major dominator. You get the same sequence in about five different keys, but they're all major chords. That's quite an amazing piece of composition.
Of course, major is positive. Yeah, major is quite a positive thing, because, you know, all blues songs are in the minor key. You know, we're in the major key.
Having said that, something like Wondrous Stories, which is very concise, is there's a lot going on in that as well.
It does transition between major and minor. Yeah, I mean, but there's always this emphasis. It's in B major, and you hear that's the first chord you hear. So you are in a major mode.
Luis Sanchez, who is from Monterrey in Mexico. Good afternoon, Luis. This is a question for the group again. It's a general question. This is you love this. How would you define progressive rock movement? Let me just check how much time we have here. We're cool. What's your idea, guys, of progressive rock? I mean, being one of the leading lights of the progressive music scene, perhaps.
Well, when we started, actually, the term was more art rock back in the 70s, and then this prog thing came along. I'm guessing a journalist invented the term, probably worked for the managing major or NME or something at the time. But of course, it's still used today, and the modern prog rock bands aren't really anything like the 70s prog rock bands. But I guess it's just a term for any band that goes, you know, outside of the three chord structure and tries to, you know, like expand the music. So that's really what I can say about that.
Well, would you agree that the Beatles were probably the first progressive rock?
Yeah, absolutely, they were.
Yeah.
And of course, they, as Steve was saying earlier, they started in many ways by covering Motown and American Chuck Berry music and Chuck Berry, exactly. And then we sort of made it our own in England because of them. And then, you know, we launched it back to the US and all over the world. So, you know, I guess progressive just means working a little bit harder in your craft.
I know both Alan and John kind of came from a progressive era. Alan, you most famously, I suppose, became aware of you, the Plastic Ono Band. John, you've been a progressive band. Steve and Jeff, you kind of came from a pop background. Steve in the 60s, if you like.
Tomorrow, which you call Tomorrow.
Oh, the Stick-Outs and things like that.
The Stick-Outs was pop.
Psychedelic.
Psychedelic pop.
Yeah, I mean, there was a pop element, but I was definitely, I was playing psychedelic, you know, which was definitely a predecessor to progressive. And I mean, progressive, basically, as Chris said, it wasn't called that. It was called, the other terms I like, the cinematographic. And I should say, we've got topographic. But the other thing about it was a combination. It allowed you to combine influences from classical, jazz, folk, country as well. I mean, that was the main thing that the prop, signified. Hey, it doesn't matter what your influence is, you can pull it together in that way.
Jay, you came from a pop background, but initially.
Yeah, I think obviously, if you look at the background that myself and Trevor had, we were, sort of pop, electronic pop duo, probably one of the first that was put together, that's right. All that we came together. But,
I believe that Video Killed the Radio Star was the biggest song ever in the world, wasn't it? Number one in every chart.
It was every country in the world. Having said that, I think that both myself and Trevor were big Yes fans. We were for prog music, whatever you wanted to call it. It wasn't called that at that time. I think it was more underground.
Your big thing was Procol Harum, as I recall. That made you want to get a Hammond, didn't it?
Well, I think so. I think my big thing was that to see bands that were coming through that were actually keyboards were an essential part of, rather than just being a guy at the back of the stage playing accompaniments. Obviously people like Kim Anderson, Rick Wakeman, were my kind of, were the first guys really to bring, keyboards to the fore in bands, and I think that that was my inspiration a lot of the time. And also Procol Harum, again, we were two keyboard players. That was really where it all changed for me. The music became, the keyboard became acknowledged as part of the new wave of rock music that was coming through.
Now, can I ask? I'm hoping it's not Bill Bruford. Is Bill, you're not here, are you?
It's not here.
No, that's okay. Because we'd get a lecture if he was, I'm sure. Personal joke, we love him dearly. What were the circumstances, Jeff, that led you to join the band during the recording of Fly From Here?
It was a strange situation, actually, because Trevor was, I think, started to produce Fly From Here with the band as it was at that time. And I think Chris and Trevor were talking together and said, we should really have a look at doing a proper recording of the song Fly From Here, which of course we were playing live on the drama tour back in 1980. And then I think Trevor suggested, why don't we get Jeff involved because we wrote a section of the song and the guys invited me over to work with them on it and it just kind of built up from there, obviously, when Fly From Here started to become much more than a short piece, it became extended and a bumpy ride and, a lot of other bits, and it kind of just kept expanding as a piece, which I think is still Yes's longest piece on record, like 24 minutes or something.
Yeah, that's right.
I can remember talking to you, Steve, and you said when you did Close to the Edge, you and John were having a big time selling it to the band, because previous to that, would it be Yours Is No Disgrace, or was it Starship Trooper that was
that
the longest song?
That kind of applies more to Topographic. I think Close to the Edge got quite an easy, reception.
Yeah.
But when we started on Tales, there was some, hang on guys, have you gone too far here? What are you talking about? And we were like, poor side. John and I were doing the sell on it, and it was a little bit difficult. But I think because of our enthusiasm, they became enthusiastic too. It was a very big project to do. So that kind of expansion from the jump from Close to the Edge to Tales, I think that was where that fits. That my response would be more that was more when it happened.
Of course, doing the three albums now, you guys kind of pioneered doing entire albums. I remember seeing you on the Topographic Oceans tour. Now, bear in mind, I'll tell this story. Chris laughed when I told him this a few years ago. I was 15, in my defense. I got into you by watching a TV program, The Albert Whistle Test, and we saw Yes at the Rainbow. The big hook for me was And You and I. But when I went to see you do the Topographic Oceans tour, the album hadn't come out. There was a problem or something. You opened up with Close to the Edge, great, and then we got the whole of Topographic Oceans. So halfway through, I guess, what would have been side two, I'm going, when are you going to play something I know? So please don't say that personally, because in hindsight I thought it was wonderful. Yeah. But I mean, it must be great, because you are pioneers. I don't really remember any bands before that doing that kind of thing. We're going to play our entire album.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, we were very brave.
I mean, people thought we were crazy, actually. You did the whole album on stage, you know, it was like that back then. And you know, we said, this is the whole show. And we just wanted to present the whole piece.
But it was also Yes's first stage, you know, the first time we had fiberglass and the first time we had dry ice.
I was just about to say, that it was around about that period that a Yes concert became an event.
Yeah.
It was theatre there, and there was a whole load of other things going on to complement the music. I'll speak to that, because we talked last year, if you remember it. Last year was your 40th anniversary, so I think that deserves a round of applause. 40 years of Yes. This year, you're heading into your 41st year with the band, but your debut was with Close to the Edge. Bill never played that live, of course, when he recorded the album. How did you feel coming into it? Because I know you didn't have very long to learn the set.
No, that's right.
And it's not the sort of thing, you know, verse, chorus, solo, chorus, out, with Yes, is it?
I was kind of pretty nervous, but I think the band was at the same time. We were worried to get through the first couple of gigs, but we didn't really have that much rehearsal at all, did we?
I will say the first show he played was fantastic.
Yeah.
2, 3, 4, 5 shows later.
That was my answer. It was 4 shows later.
But you did actually play with the band. You joined, when Bill couldn't play for some reason, I remember you telling me the first time you ever played was Siberian True in a rehearsal studio.
Yeah. Well,
you went with Eddie.
What was the name of that cotton sewing shop or something? You guys were rehearsing in the basement.
With Dan?
Yeah. It was in Shepherd's Bush downstairs.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I went down with Eddie Offit and Bill left. I think he was in the process of forming King Crimson or something like that. And
he had a burning desire to play with Bob Fripp. No idea why.
I actually had my own band that was playing more hotter stuff to play than that around that time, and it was a bar, 8, bar, 7, you know, alternate. And
I've actually, all you guys know, I've got a book coming out. We found some memorabilia, and your band, Griffin, supported Yes, so we've got the poster in the book, which is incredible. And Deep Purple were on the bill as well.
Yeah. You know, Griffin was a different band.
Yeah,
different.
No, not Griffin, it was Griffin, with an F. Rather than the PhD.
I don't recall that. I think it was Griffin with the PH in it.
Now, Griffin with the PH was the medieval type band.
Yeah.
I thought the Griffin was
the man pursued player, right?
That's right, yeah. The Trumphorn. That wasn't you.
We were a little bit more popular than that.
Yeah.
Richard Harvey, who's become a film writer, was actually the flautist in that group.
And
he played on my first album. In fact, Griffin did play on my first album.
Yeah. Here's one for John, and this is not about your time with Yes, this was before Yes. What was your first Yes concert as a fan, and what impact did it have on you? I would imagine a pretty big one.
Well, I had been already listening to the band for a couple of years, but my first concert was the Big Generator.
Big Generator?
Yeah.
Wow, so you got it by the Yes West. Which is interesting.
John is younger than the rest of us.
I know. Isn't it enough to make you sick? We're going to have to sort of bring this to a close. But what I would also like to thank you guys as a group. As we know, Peter Banks sadly died a few weeks ago. And I just want to thank you for the really nice, heartfelt words you put on the website with regards to Peter. So I think a round of applause. I mean, Peter Banks was an incredible musician. In closing, you're in as part of this Cruise to the Edge event. You are in the middle of an American tour. How's the tour been going apart from this particular rocking and rolling event?
It's been going real good. Yeah, we're on a 6-week tour. This is kind of in the middle of it, so we come off this. We've just got 2 weeks before we go home, so that's quite nice. And we're heading north up to Toronto.
This year is your 45th anniversary, of course. So presumably,
44th.
There's going to be more from you guys at some point this year, in the next 12 months.
Some,
Yeah, we'll do summer shows for you.
And for those of us who can't afford to paddle over, UK, Europe?
Next year.
Okay.
Around maybe, about actually a year from now.
In fact, what you've missed out is that we're going to South America for 2 weeks.
Oh, South America!
That's at the end of the second two, sorry, the last 2 weeks of May.
So plenty to look forward to. The band still has legs. Don't show them. Two legs with Alan, of course.
Two legs now.
Yeah. First of all, thank you for headlining this event. It's been absolutely amazing.
When we did get on this boat, we thought, oh, we better keep separate, we're going to get hounded everywhere. But it's been great mixing with people out there and just talking to fans.
Thank you. And, of course, we have plenty more for you guys, which is always good news. I believe we have a bit of a surprise from the two gentlemen at the end of the row here.
Yes, we do. I think Steve and John are going to give you a little leaves of green, is that
what you mean? Leaves of green. Are you guys going to sit here or are we going to go? Are you going to sit and watch?
Well,
we're going to sit in the audience and watch you.
Well, we're all on stage. Ladies and gentlemen, yes!
ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. I hope you enjoyed all that. There's plenty more going on. This is our final day at sea. Can I just remind you that as you go out of the theatre, just to the right in the poker room, we have Roger Dean and his display of the artwork, most closely associated with Yes and some of the other things that he's done. But it's an exclusive piece of artwork as well for Cruise to the Edge. And this will today.